It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. In under 2 weeks, the Small Business Administration has run dry of its $349 billion designed to help small businesses and their employees during this pandemic. So what are the companies who didn't receive anything this first round supposed to do? Joining us is Kelly Hunt. She's the director of the Small Business Administration's Western Pennsylvania District. Kelly, what are you hearing from business owners who maybe didn't luck out this first round?
Well, we are hearing from them, and, you know, they are interested to see if there will be some new legislation passed this week, and they're definitely ready to take advantage of it. You know, with the first round, with the Paycheck Protection Program, as well as the Economic Injury Disaster Loans, you know, things just move so quickly. You know, the funding had come through. And then, you know, within a week, they were already had used up all the funding that they had had. And so a lot of the businesses just, you know, weren't quick enough to, you know, apply. But I think that people now are more comfortable. They're more educated on what these programs are and their position to act if the legislation is passed this week.
How much money were we talking about total, especially for Pittsburgh and Pennsylvania businesses?
We did very, very well. We had almost 70,000 paycheck protection loans approved in Pennsylvania for almost $15.7 billion. So we did get a lot of applicants. You know, our Pennsylvania lenders, and especially those here in Western Pennsylvania, they, you know, put together programs so quickly to, you know, work with their clients to get this to get the application submitted. And they were a great help, as well as our resource partners, Ray Vargo and his team at Pitt, and our Women's Business Center at Chatham with Ann, and even our SCORE chapters. They really worked hard to get that word out.
WESA's parent company, the Pittsburgh Community Broadcasting Corporation, is a participant in the SBA's Payroll Protection Program. We'll have a full list of recipients and the details of their loans on our website at WESA.fm. Kelly, in this first round, the loans weren't divvied up by region or industry type, right? So who were these lucky first come, first served?
Yeah, it was meant to be first come, first served. If you look across the entire country, just over 74% of the loans that were made in the Paycheck Protection Program were for $150,000 or less. And that would be the equivalent of 8 weeks of payroll. And so if you think about that 74% being in the smallest category of funding by the amount, shows that most of these loans went to smaller businesses. Over 13% of the loans were made to construction businesses. And then right behind that is professional, scientific, and technical services. And you think of all the techs and the startup businesses we have in Western Pennsylvania, you know, that made up a very large sector. Right behind that was manufacturing, which we always love to see because there's a lot of jobs created there. And then accommodation and food services and health and social assistance. So these were where most of the loan dollars went.
Was there any advantage maybe to already having a line of credit open in a bank that's in the SBA family, or for companies big or small that had, you know, maybe accountants or financial types already on staff?
Sure. Well, we did find out early on that a lot of the banks were not going to accept applications for the Paycheck Protection Program from clients who did not bank at that bank. So if you did not have a banking relationship, most of the banks would not take an application. And we realized that was a big issue right away. These banks were so inundated with loan applications that they felt that they had to, you know, be loyal to their customers first and to process those first. So what we did is we were able to sign up 18 new lenders in Western Pennsylvania to help us with that. And then even, you know, as recently as last week, the SBA was able to sign up non-traditional lenders. And those are like Cabbage and PayPal, places that lend money online where you don't have to have a banking relationship. And we were able to secure a list of those that are doing the Paycheck Protection Program loans. So now we can, you know, be assured that even if a small business doesn't have a banking relationship with one of these lenders that are doing the loans that they have somewhere to go that they can put an application in. And even the part about, you know, the accounting and things, of course, in applying for any type of business loan, it does require some information, especially with the Paycheck Protection Program, because the whole purpose of this loan is to keep your employees on payroll. Well, so you need to know what your payroll is. And so if you're a real hands-on leader in your company, then you probably have that data. Or if you do have an accountant, then you would have that data. But some of the very small businesses, it took them a little longer to get that information together. So we're really hoping that we'll see a new package, a new stimulus plan. And if that were to pass this week, then I feel like a lot of those other businesses will be ready to apply.
And Kelly, you mentioned Anne Flynn Schlicht, the director for the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University. The Confluence's Kevin Gavin actually spoke with her earlier this week about how some of these smaller businesses with employees between 5 and 50 people in Pittsburgh, how they're doing right now.
They are struggling. They're struggling, Kevin. It's been a challenge, especially getting access to loans and funds and having working capital to keep their doors open. And again, with the restrictions that came into place, they're finding it difficult to generate revenue.
Were some of your clients at a disadvantage, maybe not ready to jump in and apply immediately?
I think, you know, all our clients, if they could, got their applications in. It depends on who they were working with. It sounds like business owners that were working with smaller community banks did get their applications in versus those that had accounts with larger banks. And I think just maybe the larger banks had a lot more applications to process. So, you know, it's often to do with the relationship you have with your lender and how good your accounting programs there are and your payroll is to have the information.
The applications, I've heard they can be tough for the average person to decipher. Some banks reported the paperwork just wasn't complete, not done the way they wanted it.
A lot of businesses struggled to understand what was complete, what was covered under the PPP program. Was it just for full-time employees? Could you include part-time employees, independent contractors? So there was a bit of uncertainty about that. And also getting, if you didn't have a payroll service, then pulling all the information together was difficult in a short period of time.
If Congress approves more money for loans for small businesses, should they be prioritized, whether it's by size of company, demographics?
I think right now, one of the things they can do is there's a lot of people who did get their applications in and have been notified that the money ran out. So I think a need to address right now is those that are waiting in line to see if they can get their applications processed, but also then looking at smaller businesses. You know, so those maybe have less than 5 employees that they do need the help right now to keep their businesses afloat.
Anne Flynn Schlicht, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
And that was my colleague Kevin Gavin speaking with the director of Chatham's Center for Women's Entrepreneurship. Kelly, in your work with the local branch of the SBA, do you think that the process can be improved so that there's not so much confusion if small businesses get a second chance?
Yes. I had mentioned, you know, the amount of loan volume that we did. And to put that into perspective for people that aren't familiar with SBA lending, in 14 days, we did the equivalent of the amount of loans that we typically do in 14 years. So when you're processing that many loans, and, you know, we had 5 days to roll the program out. So, of course, the second round will be a lot smoother.
Would you say that you're confident right now that there will indeed be a second round, that Congress will approve it?
Well, I tend to not like to discuss pending legislation just because, you know, I'm not in D.C. I know the House is working on this right now. And I feel like, you know, across the country, small businesses are really hurting. We hear these stories all day long. I take phone calls. You know, I'm from a family of small business owners. I know how bad it is. And I think that our elected officials, they realize that. And I know that a lot of these businesses have been calling in to their federal legislators and voicing their opinion. So I'm very hopeful that something will be passed very soon.
Kelly Hunt is the director of the Western Pennsylvania District of the Small Business Administration. Kelly, thanks so much.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Special education is a challenge for school districts even in normal times, and many expect it will be even trickier now that school is virtual. Districts have been told to make their best faith effort to help children with disabilities during this transition, but Keystone Crossroads reporter Avi Wolfman-Arendt says some parents wonder exactly what that means.
Megan Wagner's first grade daughter has Down syndrome. She also has ADHD and a condition called oppositional defiant disorder, which can pop up even when mom is talking to a reporter.
No, it's okay. Go settle down a minute. Go into my room and go sit down and watch TV.
Wagner's daughter needs a lot of support, at home and at school. Their district outside Reading usually provides speech therapy, physical therapy, and a personal aide. The hope has been to make it so Wagner's daughter can learn in a general education classroom. Now, everything's changed.
You know, nothing is really inclusive anymore about, you know, learning at home. And that was really the biggest goal.
Wagner says some of her daughter's services stopped or were reduced when school moved online. A teacher herself, Wagner is better suited than most to translate class assignments so her daughter can understand them.
I'm kind of left to figure out where they left off.
Wagner knows her district probably won't be able to provide some things, like physical therapy.
I mean, I'm not going to be at their throat.
But she also doesn't want her daughter to regress, and she's worried that in a crisis like this, it's the most vulnerable kids that get left behind. Dan Cooper has similar concerns. He's an attorney in the Philadelphia area who fights for the rights of students with disabilities.
We're kind of taking the approach of, it's going to be a problem. So knowing it's going to be a problem, how much of a problem can we tolerate?
The state recently said schools have to do what's, quote, appropriate and reasonable for special needs kids. That language is open to interpretation, but it is something, says attorney Maura McInerney with the Education Law Center.
Because prior to this, the responsibility of the school district was not clear.
When schools first went online, there were signs that districts would make work optional in order to duck special ed requirements, or that they might ask parents to sign a temporary waiver of their rights. McInerney thinks that phase has passed.
Increasingly, we have seen school districts working very diligently with parents in order to ensure that children with disabilities are not going to fall behind and regress during this time.
Still, families and districts will have to come to individual agreements about what's appropriate and reasonable for each child. That's tough to figure out right now, with so many things changing so quickly. Dan Cooper thinks a lot of families will default to whatever services districts offer.
How many parents are literally going to go after a school district based on a lack of appropriate instruction for 3 months during a global pandemic?
Soon, we may find out. Avi Wolfman-Arendt, Keystone Crossroads.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. With schools and so many restaurants closed, recent weeks have brought news of big farms dumping milk and plowing under crops like beans. It's raised concern for the nation's food supply. As the Allegheny Front's Julie Grant reports, local farmers and farmers' markets are figuring out how to get food to people, especially those who need it most.
The greenhouse at Who Cooks For You Farm in Clarion County is full of vegetable plants, and co-owner Chris Brittenberg says it's time to move them into the field.
Well, we'll be transplanting lettuces, sugar snap peas, scallions, beets, things like that.
Most years, about half of what the farm grows is sold to restaurants in the Pittsburgh area on their online marketplace. In early March, they had carrots, turnips, and greens available for restaurants, but then COVID-19 hit.
Very, very quickly, the governor closed the restaurants, so
people that were trying to continue to be open, we were there for them, still selling to them.
This is farm co-owner Eris Lilstrom. She could see restaurant sales weren't going to be anywhere near what they'd planned, so they shifted to allow for individual customers.
It was very fast. We had people flooding in on our email, just beeping constantly of like all these new customers.
They quickly sold out of their last carrots and turnips. Most years, any produce Who Cooks For You Farm doesn't sell to restaurants. They bring to select farmers markets around Pittsburgh. Farmers markets are considered essential businesses in Pennsylvania and are allowed to operate. This makes sense to Alice Julier. She's director of the Center for Regional Agriculture, Food, and Transformation at Chatham University. She says farmers markets are an important part of the local food system. They're accessible to a wide range of people because they're in neighborhoods. And unlike grocery stores, outdoor farmers markets can be easily rearranged to allow for social distancing.
That's one of the questions about markets. Like, will we be able to provide enough safety measures for people to feel comfortable in those spaces?
The city of Pittsburgh is rethinking its 5 farmers markets to limit exposures. Market manager Emily Bourne says they're delaying opening from early May until June this year to prepare. Customers will need to pre-order from farmers online and will only come to the markets to pick up their purchases.
It can be much more of an enter, you know, find your vendor, find your items and exit very quickly situation. There's no time to browse.
There also won't be live music or places to sit down. The Bloomfield Saturday Market in Pittsburgh is also working on changes. It's usually open most weeks through the year and can attract a couple of thousand people, but it closed in March.
One week we had a vibrant, fun, full market, and the next week we're considering that farmers markets, as most everybody knows them and loves them, will not exist like that anymore for the foreseeable future.
That's Christina Howell, executive director of the Bloomfield Development Corporation, which runs the Bloomfield markets. They're currently looking for a larger space to accommodate new safety measures like one-way aisles. And they're looking at a drive-up service so people who order from farms online can drive up and get it placed directly into their vehicle. But Howell says Bloomfield doesn't want to move to an online-only ordering system.
That then excludes the ability of low-income people to shop at a farmer's market.
That's because the federal government doesn't currently allow Pennsylvanians to use SNAP food benefits online.
They can't place an online order at all.
The state is considering whether to participate in a federal pilot program to allow SNAP recipients to order food online. But with the economy faltering, more people are suddenly food insecure. Bloomfield and the city markets are working with the nonprofit Just Harvest to figure out how to allow people to call in farm orders and to safely pay on site with food assistance benefits. For small local farmers like Who Cooks For You Farm's Chris Brittenberg, this is a lot of change and it's coming quickly.
It feels crazy to be like not only just doing what we normally do, which is already crazy, and then we have to try to develop another system and have it reach enough people where we can actually move our product. I mean, we're on the fly here. We're shooting from the hip. It's very intense.
For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
And for today, that is The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. You can find more of this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Julia Zankovich, Kylie Kosinski, and Kevin Gavin. I'm Megan Harris. Hope you have a good day of good news.